It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. With the U.S. Supreme Court ending race-conscious college admissions nationwide, we get reaction from the publication devoted to national issues affecting higher ed on how schools will comply with this ruling and what it means for diversity on Wisconsin campuses. You can join in on a new era in admissions policies. Call in with a question or comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Eric Hoover is senior writer at the Chronicle of Higher Education. Eric, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's look ahead here. What could be the immediate consequences of the Supreme Court's ruling on enrollment at colleges and universities?
Yes, the immediate consequence, particularly at selective colleges and universities, likely will be a downturn in the enrollment of underrepresented minority students. So that would be African-American students, Latino and Latina students, and Native American students. This is what some prominent institutions have seen happen over the last few decades when they have been forced to, in several states, including California and Florida and Michigan, when institutions have been forced to do admissions without being able to consider race. So if we're looking at what has happened in other parts of the country, that is likely to occur, at least to some degree, at many of the nation's most prominent, most sought after colleges and universities.
Can you give us some examples of materials or systems that colleges will need to change in order to comply with this ruling?
Yes, for sure. So there's going to be a shift. And so if you're not able to, as an admissions officer, look at an applicant's race, and you can't consider an applicant's race per se, right? The fact of someone's race as a result of last week's Supreme Court ruling, then colleges are going to be looking at what are known as race neutral factors. And so there'll be even greater attention paid to a student's socioeconomic status, right? Colleges will be digging more deeply into whatever information they can find, and there's plenty of data out there that would give them a sense of the opportunities a student has had or perhaps lacked, right? An applicant's high school, colleges want to know how many students there qualified for free and reduced lunch, for instance, or what is the neighborhood like demographically that applicants grew up in. These are not perfect measures. They have to be used carefully and ethically, but now is the time that colleges are going to have to drill down on measures of socioeconomic inequality and disadvantage. Instead of looking also at race, they're going to have to look at data that is often described to some degree as a proxy for race among other factors. And so this mix of data is going to become more and more important over time.
When I hear you say that, I think about one of your articles you wrote on this, and one of your sources, I think they were saying how it's going to make the admissions process a lot harder and a lot more expensive. And I paused there because I didn't really understand how would it be more expensive under this ruling to bring in a more diverse class of students. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, that's a great question, Kate. And so this is based on, I can't remember who said that quote. It's been a long week.
Yeah.
If you look at the amicus briefs filed by the University of Michigan and the University of California, Berkeley, there's a lot of detail in there about how after there was a ban in each state on the consideration of race and admissions, those flagship institutions spent a lot of time and money trying to build and grow what we might call workarounds for not being able to consider race. And so some of those strategies involved creating new scholarships for lower income students. And not just, it's one thing to have a scholarship that might benefit a lower income student, but you have to go out there and meet with those students and meet with those families all throughout the state. And to have a presence in communities that perhaps many flagship institutions haven't had. And so in the case of the University of Michigan at Ann Arbor, I think for a time anyway, they had created satellite offices, say in Detroit and perhaps in other areas of the state. I can't recall exactly, but like it's not just enough to change your website and send students an email, particularly lower income, underrepresented students, many of whom do not have parents who went to college. And so this was outreach, this was communications, this was new
Relationship building.
and relationship building. And that sounds quaint. It's especially important when colleges are trying to connect with underrepresented students, first generation students who might not have a very positive view about college, or they might just be deeply ambivalent about it and certainly wondering how they might afford it. Will they fit in? So, yes, boots on the ground, it can be an effective strategy. It's also a time-consuming one and an expensive one.
Going back to 2003, the Supreme Court limited the ways that colleges could consider race in admitting students. Can you explain how universities have used race in recent years in deciding who to admit?
Yes, well, since 1978 up until last week, colleges have been permitted to consider race in a limited way. So some people out in the universe might think that, oh, there are a certain number of seats set aside for minority students. That is not the case. Or that there's a quota, there has been a quota system. That's not the case. Race is often described as being one of several factors in admission. So just one facet. For one applicant, it might be considered a tip or a plus. For another applicant, it might not be. And so it was a limited use. Race was generally not determinative in admissions decisions, but it was one factor that selective institutions used to get a sense of the overall picture of who that young applicant was. And race was considered along with all kinds of other attributes, talents that the applicant had, courses in which the applicant had excelled, the geography of where the applicant came from. That's something colleges consider, right? A university that recruits nationally, say like the University of Wisconsin, does not want to have all students just from like three or four states, right? It wants a mix of students. So race was one of many, many variables that selective colleges are considering, or at least were so until last week.
Until last week, talking about the Supreme Court's ruling prohibiting colleges and universities from considering race and admissions. Eric Hoover with us, senior writer at the Chronicle of Higher Education. You can weigh in, bring your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Eric, you mentioned these selective schools, highly selective, Ivy League institutions, Harvard, Yale. Is it those types of institutions or state universities like the University of Wisconsin more likely to be affected by this ruling?
Yes, it is. Those are the institutions that are will surely be most affected by this ruling. It has implications for perhaps for many institutions that are less selective, but of course, it's important to remember that the majority of four-year colleges and universities in this country admit the majority, if not the vast majority, of their applicants, right? And so there's not this intense kind of competition for seats, often in limited supply. And there's not the same on the admission side, at less selective institutions generally, there's not the same fine grain of detailed consideration of all these attributes that a student might bring to your campus. There's not these lengthy committee meetings that go on for weeks and weeks, in which super selective colleges are trying to, as they will often say, craft a class or shape a class, student by student. That's just not something that happens at the majority of institutions, even though those less selective and perhaps less famous institutions, by and large, certainly value diversity among their applicants and among their student bodies, but there's not that same kind of bottleneck of competition comparing this applicant to another and considering, perhaps multiple, if not dozens, of factors in each student's application at a certain point in the admissions process that you find at, Madison or at Harvard or what have you.
So what about the ripple effect here? Could the ruling end up restricting race as a factor in, say, awarding scholarships or in the financial aid office?
That is a great question, and many people are asking it throughout the country, Kate. The immediate answer is, according to the legal experts I've been in touch with over the last week, the immediate answer is that there's nothing in the Supreme Court's decision from just a week ago today that seems to preclude a college from targeting aid, from using race-conscious financial aid and scholarship programs. The decision just doesn't deal with that question directly. So I think for now, I would say two things. Colleges and universities are probably fine to continue those race-conscious programs. However, we know we live in a litigious society. The same upwelling of opposition to race-conscious admissions policies that we've seen in this country for a half century or more, it's not going to abate all of a sudden just because there was a victory for critics and opponents of race-conscious admissions in the Supreme Court last week. So some institution out there, probably a big-name university, sooner or later will find itself on the receiving end of a lawsuit, perhaps about a different race-conscious policy on the campus. But we'll just have to wait and see if and when that occurs.
So, you know, as you say there, race and admissions has come up again and again in the courts. Will this victory spell the end, or is it opening the door to more litigation?
Yeah, I think when you look around the country, particularly look in states such as Florida right now, I mean, they're an outlier, but there are other states on their heels. Florida has, I would say, basically declared war on all diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives within its public higher education system. And I believe a law restricting, if not more or less obliterating, diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts at Florida universities is just about to take effect. Maybe it's today or next week. You know, that is a full scale opposition to race conscious anything, really. And I think we're going to see that at least a handful of other states. So no, your good question, Kate. I think the answer is no, this is not the end. This is a continuation of a relentless, what appear to be a relentless series of attacks on anything that considers race, a program, a student service, and you name it, on some college campuses.
Chronicle of Higher Education senior writer Eric Hoover, our guide to changing college admission systems across America, moving toward race-neutral admissions following the landmark Supreme Court ruling. We learn what it could mean at home here in Wisconsin. Call in with a question or comment along the way, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss ripple effects on college campuses after the Supreme Court's ruling banning race as a factor in university admissions, saying it violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. Call in with a question, a comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Chronicle of Higher Education's senior journalist Eric Hoover as our guide. Let's go to Janet in Burlington. Janet, hi. What comes up for you?
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Hoover. The question I have is that I don't think that what the Supreme Court ruled was a good idea, that perhaps minority students may not have access to the better schools that their Caucasian other students might have had, and I was wondering how you feel about that, that maybe they should still have the advantage of the affirmative action.
Janet,
right.
Go ahead, Eric.
All right, thanks, Kate. Thank you for your comment and question, Janet. I mean, I don't wear an opinion hat here, But I take your question as an important one, your comment. And I can tell you that many people who work in higher education, many school counselors and college counselors who work with underrepresented populations, would agree with you. They would say, for sure, this is a terrible decision that will be a setback for racial equity in this country, that will have a extremely negative and perhaps drastically negative effect on the enrollment of underrepresented minority students. Because as you point out, and it's very important, race in this country certainly is entwined with racial inequity is entwined with socioeconomic inequity and education inequity. And it's generally true that underrepresented minority students are not on equal footing when it comes to who's had which advantages, who has had the benefit of attending well-resourced, well-funded schools. And so this will continue to be a challenge for colleges. It already was. And now that challenge has gotten even greater because the Supreme Court decision might have changed the landscape. But the inequities that existed last Wednesday, the day before the ruling, still exist, right? Those inequities are not going away. And in fact, the effects of them will probably become more pronounced in the years ahead.
The Biden administration has given the Department of Education 45 days to outline legal ways for universities to encourage diversity. What are you watching for there? What clarity or what tools would help colleges?
Yeah, that's a great question. Everyone is eagerly awaiting that guidance. And I think one thing that colleges and university officials are looking for is some sort of assurance about the value of diversity and therefore any institutional strategies that support it. Yes, this one tool, and it's a big tool, it's significant. The tool called Race Conscious Admissions has been removed from colleges' toolkits, but it is not the only tool, and there are other tools in there. You and I talked just a couple minutes ago about race-conscious scholarships. I think that is one of the key questions that colleges will be hoping to see answered in this guidance. But what if we have a race-conscious scholarship program? Is that still okay? Many highly selective colleges have targeted recruitment and outreach programs. They have fly-in programs that bring underrepresented students to campus to get a feel for the place. Those have race-conscious elements. Are those still okay? And if so, how do colleges perhaps need to think about adjusting them, the language they use to describe them, what strategies, if any, will be taken off the table? I think those are the big ones. Race-conscious admissions is gone. Race conscious, everything else. What will the government tell? What will the education department tell colleges about the new lay of the land, and how different will that look from the lay of the land colleges knew up until late last week?
Let's bring in Gary now in Ripon. Gary, hi, go ahead.
Yes, my observation would be that these elite institutions don't want to comply with the Supreme Court ruling. So where the cost is coming in is they're going to do a lot of workarounds in order to make it sort of look like they're complying, even though they're not.
Gary, thank you. Do you anticipate different workarounds, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, thanks for your comment, Gary. I guess I'd say, sure. Colleges are going to be developing workarounds, and in many cases, these will not be brand new strategies. They will just be bolstered strategies, right, or revised strategies, enhanced strategies, if you will. I would say that the word workaround, is tricky. Colleges will be looking for ways to adjust. Any college or university that's looking for a backdoor kind of workaround, right? A loophole, a way to sort of get around the weight of the Supreme Court decision. Well, Chief Justice Roberts, in his majority opinion, warned colleges and universities that they cannot do that. And any institution that tries to get around the force of this opinion and the meaning of this decision will put itself at great risk, right, of losing federal funding, of finding itself in the middle of the next lawsuit. And so, yes, I do think adjustment is the key word. That's what colleges will be doing, and then some. But getting around the opinion itself does not seem to be a viable option.
Can we just dip our toe into legacy admissions here in our final moments? The civil rights groups, sued Harvard over the benefit it gives to children of graduates who are known as legacy applicants, and groups like the NAACP and Lawyers for Civil Rights, they argue that this gives an unfair advantage to white people. Can you talk about that? How big of an advantage is legacy admissions?
Yeah, well, we know from all the information that came out in the lawsuit against Harvard that legacy advantage, at least at that institution, and it's true at many others, is a substantial plus for an applicant. They are many times more likely to be admitted if they are a legacy, right? And by and large, the vast majority of applicants who are legacies are going to be white applicants, and most of them, if not nearly all of them, will come from affluent families. So yes, many people who supported race-conscious admissions are saying right now, wait a minute, what about this advantage? What about this substantial plus? How do we deal with that? I don't know that immediately anyway, a legal challenge will force colleges and universities to abandon legacy admissions. What happened this week is just a complaint that was filed, and not like a lawsuit. But I do think and suspect that the force of public opinion, and I would say I detect a growing disgust with legacy advantages in college admissions.
Well,
that'll compel colleges, in the court of public opinion, if you will. I think there's a growing case to be made against legacy admissions.
Thank you for joining us. Eric Hoover, senior writer at the Chronicle of Higher Education. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.